Look, Todd, I know you're a big conspiracy theorist, okay? And you believe everything, man.
It's not
you're
true.
So naive, man.
There are no aliens in Roswell, and contact lenses aren't made out of amoebas.
They are, dude.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Wait, did you see that?
What?
Chupacabra. He just ran down the aisle, Todd. You better find him.
Well, I've advocated for this sort of idea of, now, you say that the databases aren't great, but I still think that there needs to be more of, like, this sort of statistical analysis that I haven't seen anywhere, you know? Like, we need a Nate Silver type to synthesize all of this huge databases to see if we can figure out any pattern. Like, I don't think anyone's actually looked at anything like that to try and decipher any pattern. Like, who knows? Maybe we might find out that the UFOs happen, you know, via, I don't know, a crescent moon. You know,
right, I think, yeah,
something crazy like that. Only on, only every third month or so. Who knows? You know what I'm saying?
You see them cluster around Venus being visible or certain aircraft being tested, something like that. I think that'd be neat.
Right. So, you know, some kind of like synthesis of the whole thing. Now, what I was talking about with the schism, and you didn't touch on this in the article. I don't know if you're kind of aware of what's going on in ufology as far as this part goes. But the schism, there's also been a schism between beyond the scientific and the other end is sort of this, like, this outgrowth of UFO activism. This whole disclosure thing and the exopolitics.
Oh, right.
And that's really the big – are you there?
Yeah, I'm
okay.
Sure.
I heard a little beep.
Just a click, yeah.
That was odd. I'm being harassed by the NSA right now. activism and trying to push the disclosure movement forward. And there's people like on my end of the thing, of the field, I guess you could say, who are like, we can't be pushing this forward by saying we know the answer because we don't know the answer.
Right.
You know, and that's and you know, you may find this interesting from the sort of financial end of things. The idea of disclosure, that entices a lot of the people who have the money.
Oh yeah, you're right.
So the people who are
I never thought of that.
Yeah, this might be something worth exploring for your writings. But the disclosure thing entices the people with the money, and then they put the money into that, and then the scientific end of stuff doesn't get nearly as much funding. Because it's not as exciting or glamorous or you know, titillating as aliens and stuff like that.
Yeah, I heard this. And that kind of goes back to the whole skeptic mission drift as well. You have to figure out what question you're trying to answer or what goal you're trying to promote. And if you get off track with some of these other things, that yeah, they get you attention and they cause drama and get people's eyeballs on the subject. Are they really advancing your mission, or are they just being a side drama, a circus, a sideshow, you know?
Right, but the problem is the whole thing is so huge that there's no, like, control over the whole thing, if you know what I mean.
Right.
It is, the whole thing is a sideshow. So, you know.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah. It's do we follow the tiniest man on earth or do we follow the bearded lady? We don't know exactly who to back in this horse race as far as getting to the bottom of UFOs.
Yeah, like that whole Atacama alien creature. That was like a sideshow. It was like a sideshow gaff. I don't know what that was. It was cool.
It looked like an action figure, but I don't know. I didn't study it like the guy who claimed he studied it. I don't really quite understand.
I talked to him. Well, I talked to that person who studied it.
Yeah.
And he was like, he used some evasive language. Like, just everything you need to know is in the article. Like, I can't really tell you anymore, which gave me the impression that he was just not allowed to say more what was behind us.
Well, that's the thing. That's one of the funnier parts of the guy who was behind that whole thing. He's a big disclosure player, and the irony of all that is when he produces these events and stuff, he makes everybody sign non-disclosure agreements not to tell anybody what he said. So I'm willing to bet that that guy was on a non-disclosure agreement to get on board
sense,
with
no.
the humanoid study. So that would
yeah.
explain what he said, which is the hilarious irony of it. If you're
disclosure and non-disclosure.
Right. If you're a massive advocate for UFO disclosure, why are you making everyone sign non-disclosure agreements when they come to your events? That doesn't, you know. But the sad part is that, you know, there's people that support these folks, let's say. You know,
I think there's always going to be like 20% of the population that is going to do things that are just not reasonable, no matter what.
Yeah.
That's my thumbnail, about 20%. I've seen that in surveys before. You know, people who believe that, you know, people can be possessed by the devil or that witches are still around. About 20%.
You wonder why. Oh, who knows?
It takes all kinds, I guess, to make the world go round.
Yeah. Now, in keeping with this, can ufology be scientific? You also wrote about how it seems like the paranormal is moving away from science to the spiritual. Do you think that's sort of like this grasping at, from your take, do you think they're sort of grasping at straws because they haven't been able to harness science to prove their point?
Yes, I think that's exactly what's happening. They tried to use science, and it failed them because they were using it wrong. And I wrote an article about a paranormal conference that I went to, and I was surprised how there was still a lot of sciencey stuff there, lots of gadgets, and I asked questions. Oh, yes, we're scientific. We use these gadgets. But there was almost as much emphasis on religious protection, metals, certain cleansing things like sage, and there's pendulums and all sorts of very occult-like objects, which I found surprising. I was kind of surprised by that. And I noticed that people like John Zaffis really emphasized that as well. Your religious belief needs to be strong in order for you to go into the situation and deal with it. And I thought that surprised me. So when I came home and I wrote the article, I contacted some of my friends who used to be paranormal investigators and sort of are skeptical now, and asked them, is this real? What I observed, was this true? They're moving away from the scientific and more towards the spiritual? And they said, yes, absolutely. It's easier to adapt that to their needs. The idea of spiritualism could be very broad. You don't need rules. Science got rules, and that's annoying to them. So the spiritual idea, they could just make stuff up. It's broad. It's loose. And it serves their needs, and it's a popular thing. It was an interesting shift that I noticed. I hadn't noticed before until I went to this conference and saw it.
Now, I know you're not going to agree with me, but I have to proffer the point that I'm of the opinion, though, that I do feel that, like, science has become its own kind of religion, and maybe you feel that way in some respects, but I think that since all religion is fallible, that eventually we'll find out that science is also fallible. And I'm sure you vehemently will disagree with that, but I guess that's where we part company in a way.
It's way more complicated than that. Yeah,
I know, but I speak to the common man. I'm like Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, no, science is not a religion. It's an anti-religion. It's the opposite of a religion. It's based on facts and evidence, whereas religion is based on faith and belief. So, I mean, it's really not the same. But the fact that science is fallible, yes, absolutely. I wrote a piece on that about scientism, which is the overuse of science is great. Science can solve everything. You rely on it too much.
Hmm.
That's also a terrible road to go down because it gets us into trouble. We really need to understand, and I mean, this is what I do in my day job, to understand how to take science and make good applications of it, which include what the public thinks is important. It may have scientific backing, but it doesn't make any sense. For example, there's a pandemic. We need to find a way to stop a pandemic. Do we kill and isolate all the people who have this disease, or do we proactively kill people who are exposed? No, that's unethical. But that would be the best way to stop the disease. But we don't do that. We have to find other means to do that. So I think when you overuse science, that's bad. You have to consider other aspects of it. And boy, I got kind of roundly criticized for that article. That was one of the ones that did not go over well. And it was funny because when I wrote it, I realized that it could be taken in a number of different ways, and I knew I would get shit for it, and I did.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's okay. Sometimes I have to write things out so I can think about them better.
Yeah.
And I think I needed to do that. But, yeah, science, not a religion.
All right. I think that's where we part company, but
yeah, it does have its issues. Nothing's perfect, just like democracy. Yeah.
Right. I just think that, you know, as you said, the over-reliance of science.
Mm-hmm. Can be a problem, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know.
But if I didn't sort of agree with you, I wouldn't be talking to you now because I'd be the one that said, Bigfoot's bogus, I'm not going to talk about it. But I understand that people find value and importance and meaning in those subjects, and that's why I'm still very interested in them. Even beyond the scientific aspect.
Yeah. I don't dislike you because we disagree on that. I just think that, you know, but I don't think that, you know, maybe for the entertainment of others, but I don't think that anything can be gained from debating the point because neither one of us are really going to sort of shift our philosophies on all of that.
Yeah, you're right. That would be a weird esoteric discussion, so.
Exactly.
Let's not go there.
I save my weird esoteric discussions for reptilians and Michael Jackson hoaxes.
There you go.
You've already taken a shot at the ghost folks. Is it also an antagonistic relationship with them, or are they? You said you went on a ghost hunt. Actually, let's move into that. Let's not get mean. So tell me, did you suffer from tremendous headaches after the event from rolling your eyes the entire visit on the ghost hunt, or what was it like? You know, doing the ghost hunt.
It was great.
Oh, okay.
It was great. I really appreciate the people who invited me there and my friend Ron, who took a little bit of heat for it because he wanted, you know, he got the approval for me to come along. They knew that I was a writer and a skeptic, and I wasn't really buying into this thing. I wasn't the only skeptic there. There was another person there who sort of stood in the back just like me and didn't say anything, and I was there to observe. And
yeah.
I think that they were confused that I wasn't a hands-on person. But the way I approach things is I like to observe because I don't know enough to ask smart questions in the beginning, so I just want to watch, and I want to observe, and I don't want to be involved. I don't want to change things. I want to see how they normally act. So I think that was kind of off-putting for them. Maybe they wanted me to participate more, but I was just interested in seeing what went on and having my own personal experience about how it feels. I didn't know if I would be scared. I didn't know if I would feel the environment sort of making me put me in a mood to believe more. You know, I was really curious because I'd never been in that position before.
Yeah, and what was the outcome? Were you scared?
No, not at all. Never once was I scared.
You can admit that if you were scared.
I tell you what, these people were more scared of spiders than I was of ghosts or anything popping out at me. There were bugs all over the place. Spiders and, you know, thousand leggers, and I got 50 mosquito bites that night.
Oh, God. See, that's awful.
Yeah.
That alone will keep me from ever going on a ghost hunt. Oh, God.
Well, this was in a swampy area. It was my own fault. I didn't use the right bug spray. I was the buffet that night. I probably got West Nile from it, too, because I had, like, a fever 10 days later.
They were probably hazing you. It was probably some kind of – they probably gave you, like, mosquito attractant.
They were great. They were great. But it really was important for me to see – the idea of I see them on TV and I see what other people talk about they do, but it was really important for me to be in that moment and see how they reacted to this and see how seriously they take this. It was really important for me to see that. And it was really interesting to see some of the equipment acting funny, like the EMF meters and things like that. When I got back, I don't want to go into some of the things that happened that really, really made me angry. There were two incidents that happened that really made me angry, and I don't want to talk about it in detail because it's probably not fair to the groups. They can't speak for themselves, but two incidents made me extremely angry that were worse than I thought, the attitude of ghost hunters towards investigations. Really upsetting to me that they would do what they did or react the way they did.
They didn't
say anything.
Will you tell me a little bit about this? You've teased it too much now. You've teased it all too much.
Well, you know, now this was an investigation. It was more like a fun trip because this is a place that was where we went has a reputation for spirit activity and stuff. So it was a large group of people, very large group of people in small places, all with their equipment, all with cell phones, all making noise, and it was extremely uncontrolled.
Okay.
But yet here we are with these gadgets and stuff. And people saying they feel things or they feel a brush or they hear something. And every noise was paranormal.
Yeah.
Every noise. Nothing that I saw was checked. I went and checked and I found a cause for one of the noises. It was very simple. Nobody else went and looked. And when I said, I found something here. They were dismissive. No, that's not what I heard.
Oh. Okay.
And I was like, that's what you heard. And it was something completely different. I stormed out of the room at that point. And I'm like, oh.
Wow.
I got to gain control because
you're about to throw down.
I don't want to be that person who does that. I'm a guest. I don't want to do that. But I thought maybe they'd be interested in that.
Yeah.
And at another point where I felt that they were dealing with an area with one of their clients that I thought was unethical and could get them into legal trouble, that also was disturbing to me. I heard them just talking about it, and I don't know enough about it to say anything. I don't want to disclose anything. But sometimes I think they get themselves in a little bit too deep, and they're doing things that they really should not be doing, whether they're practicing psychology or medicine, really, that they shouldn't be, or they could possibly get into legal trouble if something goes wrong. So I mentioned that to them. They said they understood that was a potential danger, so that's all I could do.
All right. I think I can kind of do the math on that, but I'll leave it up to the folks at home.
I'll tell you in private.
Oh, nice. That's the bonus, folks, of having your own show. Let me hit on a couple of points here in the chat room that folks are asking about while we talk here. Vale takes issue with skeptics lumping everyone in the UFO community into one category, like everyone is a blind believer, which he says is not true at all, which I agree with. You know, there's plenty of people in ufology that are very discerning and skeptical. It's not everybody's a card carrying member of the aliens or visiting club.
Right. That's absolutely true, and we do it for all groups. People do it for all ghost hunters are the same, and all skeptics are the same, and that's absolutely not true. There's going to be a range of beliefs and diversity in there. It's just hard to characterize. You have to make some sort of generalization if you're going to do something about it. So in this case, we're making this generalization that most UFO researchers were more interested in this aspect that we can't really do anything about than actually finding out what's in the sky that people are seeing. We have to make that generalization so we can move forward. If there's already people moving in that direction, that's great. But we have to make that statement in order to solve the problem.
Right, right. And I mean, we talked about on the show here, you and I, about building this bridge. I think what would help a lot of people in the paranormal community, well, maybe not a lot of them, but the people who are really on the side of figuring this all out, which I am and a lot of my good friends are, you know, maybe if, and I'm not saying me, this isn't like a cry for attention, I could care less, but maybe if there was more, I guess, quote-unquote credit or recognition given to the open-minded UFO researchers from the skeptical community, it might maybe, you know, bring the two camps together a little further, you know, where it's not just, it's so antagonistic. Maybe if there were people, I'm not talking about you, I'm just saying the skeptical community in general, maybe there was a recognition that, yes, there's crazy people in the UFO field. Yes, there's people that believe all this stuff. But wait, there's also people that are actively trying to figure this out. I mean, you did do that in your article there about UFOs and ufology. So you're doing the work that I'm asking for. But if there was more of a move toward that from the skeptical side, I think that maybe that it would be an easier way for people to come together.
Yeah, I think it's going to take individuals connecting with other individuals.
Yeah, absolutely.
To the point where it becomes more of a feature that everybody notices. But for right now, there is this stereotype that travels, and it's hard to get rid of that. But we have to chip at it little by little by taking these examples of good researchers and good research that's being done on both sides. And I love to be able to credit good research from, for lack of a better word, you know, the believers or the paranormal side. I love to do that because it's an example of, see, they have something to say, they have something to share. On the other hand, I like when the paranormal people will credit the skeptics' work. And this past year, I've seen good exchanges with the UFO people that I've been involved with, which is great. I've seen horrible behavior in the cryptozoology community. Really terrible. They are not recognizing skeptical literature. But as a skeptic growing up with cryptozoology, I read all the books. All the books were pro Bigfoot. Bigfoot exists. You know, there's very little skepticism in any of the literature that has existed up until recently with regards to cryptozoology. Right now, there are a couple researchers who are doing unbelievably fantastic scholarly work in cryptozoology, digging into the original sources, finding new information from the original sources, doing very scientific work. There are even some zoologists involved. And that is what we really need to be paying attention to. But instead, they end up promoting the speculation, the hype, the drama.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's not good. So when the skeptical scholarship came out, there's been a couple examples, one being Abominable Science by Prothero and Loxton, which I, you know, full disclosure, I helped contribute to that book. But it's like nothing I've ever seen before. And it's such a long and involved piece of work. I can't imagine anybody in the cryptozoology community doing that. They're more interested in putting out a popular book that'll sell to a bigger crowd, where this book is scholarly. You could use it as a textbook. It's so good, but it's very readable. And I sort of issued a challenge to them saying, read it and then tell me what you think. What did they do? They read the chapter that they were familiar with, either the Bigfoot chapter and the Nessie chapter, and they wrote a one-star review for the whole book based on that chapter because they didn't like what it said.
Yeah.
It was extremely pathetic, really pathetic. And I got some nasty emails and some nasty messages, and there was some stuff that went on there because it was not right. It was not fair. And it just showed how juvenile some of them acted because they're protecting a belief. And they're not about getting to the right answer. They're about protecting their belief. And that really, really soured me on some people.
Okay. That's disappointing to hear.
Very. It was very disappointing to see.
Yeah.
We had some back channel discussions, the authors and a small group of us saying, gee, you know, I thought this guy was cool. And pulled this. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
It was really disappointing.
Yeah. I don't have much to say to that. I mean, I don't really know the players involved in all that, but it is disappointing.
Well, I think whenever you challenge somebody's investment in their livelihood or their interest,
right,
you're going to get that antagonistic defensiveness.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, nobody wants to hear that their life's work or what
yeah.
they spend 90% of their free time on or any of that stuff is hokum, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, I go into this with the idea that maybe it is. You have to have that fresh sort of open-mindedness, or else, I don't even know, you know, maybe you're going to lose your mind.
Right.
Especially if you get older and older and nothing happens.
Yeah. Yeah, you do see some of the Bigfooters that happened to, like Rene DeHinden, never really was convinced. He spent his whole life, and I think when he got to the end, you know, he was getting really old, and he had doubt, and that must be a horrible feeling. So,
exactly, yeah. Yeah, well, I remember reading a quote from him that shook me to my core, where I think he was like in his 50s or 60s, and he was like, I never had a wife or kids or a mortgage or a family or any of that other stuff, because I'm focused on what's important, the Bigfoot. And it was just like, oh, Jesus, dude, I think you're really projecting right now what you really...
Oh, but he was a character.
Yeah, so it's, you know, after reading something like that and seeing so many people that I have a lot of respect for, you know, having passed away, never getting the answers and stuff, it should give most people in this the, you know, the perspective to take a healthier look at this and invest their time in a more healthy fashion. I always have advised that on this show. You know, we do a baseball show every year to try and, you know, get us a fresh breath and be like, listen, there's life beyond the paranormal. Go out and, you know, smell the roses, take a day to, you know, spend time with your kids and instead of analyzing the latest UFO films.
I've also heard it suggested that, like, every 20 years you should change careers for the same reason, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll...
All right, I'm getting pestered here by a caller in the chat, so we'll put him in here. You ready to take a call?
All righty.
All right, here we go. Vale, what's going on, pal? You're on the air.
I just actually wanted to call in and just make a few comments just listening to Sharon. You know, first thing I wanted to point out, I do a bit of UFO research, is earlier she mentioned, you know, that skeptics have to generalize people in the UFO community in order to start to try and change things for the better. But one thing I don't think she realizes that the flip side to that is by generalizing, the people that are out there trying to do good work, they see that generalization. And, you know, it's very kind of discouraging. So I think that's important for her to keep in mind that, you know, maybe you don't need to generalize. Maybe what you need to do is take every researcher and investigator on a, you know, individual basis and judge them based on their work, not just generalize for the sake of, you know, you're saying that you need to do that to get something done. That's the first point. The second point is, earlier you mentioned the MUFON data, and, oh, you heard that it, you know, wasn't very good. That's not a very scientific statement. That's a very general statement about the MUFON data. So that right there to me isn't very scientific. And, you know, I guess my question would be, two questions. What's the extent of the research you've done into UFOs personally? And why should anybody... Given on how much research you've done in that field, why should anybody take what you have to say at much value?
Okay. Sharon,
there's great comments. Okay. Yeah, thanks for that. The idea of generalization, you're absolutely right. I take your point. I'm trying to look for those people who could be the new leaders, the ones who are already doing it in a new and different and more effective way. And that's what I would like to point out. Sometimes I didn't have a problem finding those people. In fact, they found me with regards to the UFO thing. I'm having a bit more trouble finding those people in the other paranormal areas. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not looking in the right places, or it just hasn't come up yet, or they're not there yet, or they're all still following each other. But I think that the UFO community is just a little bit more mature and has gone through these changes and has figured out a bit more of what works and what doesn't work. But I would definitely keep that in mind about the different types of research style. That's a good point. On the MUFON database, that I had a person who was intimately involved in the database and MUFON tell me that the data is not good. So that was a secondhand, but from an actual researcher tell me there was severe problems with that database. So I'm not just grabbing that one out of the air.
Mm-hmm.
Why listen to me as a skeptic telling you what you should do? great question.
Well, actually,
I don't
more
do
specifically, my question was, what is your research that you've done specifically into UFOs? You know, books you've read, you know, classes you may have taken, documents that you viewed, declassified documents, you know, and then the rest of the question as well.
Oh, well, that would take a long time because I've been through the standard stuff, the report, the couple of books by the more prominent books. UFOs, we've talked about this before, not really my thing. My thing is more about anomalous natural phenomenon. So with regards to UFOs being natural phenomenon, that's one thing I'm really interested in. Things like ball lightning and stuff like that. So that's really my interest. With regards to, I was never very much into, I mean, you know, everyone reads Communion and they get freaked out about alien abduction. at that point, I was really more into the physicality of UFOs than the whole abduction thing. But my interest and my background is in science and the public. So I think I have a sort of unique perspective in knowing how you could design effective scientific research and apply it to these areas that are sort of on the fringe of science. And I think that we can make huge improvements in that. And unfortunately, the scientific community really isn't going to pay much attention to it. They're busy doing other things. I'm more interested in the public aspect of it, so I'm able to give it a try.
Well,
all right. Sound good, Val?
Thanks.
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, I just want to, you know, say one last thing. I mean, that definitely sounds reasonable. You know, one other suggestion I'd give you is, you know, the more you know about the history of the UFO phenomenon, what the studies that have been conducted and the good data out there, the more you know about that as a skeptic, I think people like myself and other people that are trying to approach UFO research from a serious point of view, I think your opinion of UFOs, because you say you're not really that into UFOs, but you know, I've read some of your writings on it, and obviously you've mentioned it tonight. So another suggestion would be, the more research you've done into the history and what's come before where we are to this point today, maybe your skeptical opinion might carry a little bit more weight. So that's another suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Fair enough. I think that was a – I like that Vale didn't come at you, you know. We didn't have an antagonistic
point.
Call,
does,
so I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Sharon sounds really nice.
Sharon is really nice. Thank you for calling in, Vale.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I think he's right in a sense. You know, it can only help to because the people who devoted a lot of time to this, they're and this isn't a commentary on Vale, so I don't want him to think that I'm speaking of him. But you know, they'll try and trip you up in a sense. You know what I mean? So it's a difficult thing. But I mean, when you're a skeptic, you exist under the umbrella of skeptic of all this stuff, unfortunately, you know.
Right.
So it's hard for you at times where you're like, listen, UFOs is like seventh on my depth chart, you know.
Yes, exactly. There's so much. I can read in. It's so much. I only have 170 books on my reading list these days. I'm trying.
Right. Okay, this is an interesting question because you're a geologist, so a lot's been made. I can kind of already telegraph your answer here, but it's good to have it on the record. A lot's been made about these lunar and Martian artifacts that appear in these photos of the Moon and Mars, obviously. So what do you think of these things as a geologist?
I covered a lot of these stories on Doubtful News because I find them fascinating. People find these things on Mars that look really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the rat and, oh gosh, there's a whole pile of things that they found. There's lots of shiny things that probably shouldn't be there.
And of course the big daddy, the face on Mars.
Oh well, yeah. Well, that to me that's a closed book.
Okay.
The higher resolution photographs clearly mark that as a geologic feature that we have this tendency to see things that look like faces. It just happens. So it's the human part of us. But it was really interesting. You'd see these stories come out that, oh, this strange thing spotted on from the Mars Observer. And it was these people at home who were looking very close up, zoomed in on these pictures, and just scrolling little bit by little bit, finding the strange-looking objects.
Yeah.
And posting them on wherever, Reddit usually, to,
yeah,
to get attention. And that's anomaly hunting. And if you look at enough things, you're going to find something that resembles another thing that you know. It's just going to happen. We're trained to look for things like that as people. So I think it's hilarious that these, within like an hour after these things are posted on Reddit, they have their own Twitter account.
Yeah,
it's like the rat on Mars. And when I post the stories, I will get these Twitter accounts answering back to me, telling me what they are and that they're happy to see the story. So it's definitely a really cool cultural phenomenon, but there's nothing mysterious about it. It's just the way our brains work. We just look for those things.
Right. There's some kind of scientific word for it. It's like seeing shapes.
Pareidolia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Simulacrum and pareidolia is what it's called.
Okay. We have a historic episode here because you have a second caller. So.
Oh boy.
I know. Coming at us from the 504 area code. So let's bring them on the show here. Let's see here.
Hello, Tim.
504, you're on the air, buddy. What's going on?
Hi. This is Jeb. That's my old phone from New Orleans. And hi, Sharon. Just two things.
Oh, is this Jeb Card?
Hi. Yeah, hi.
Oh, it's the man who brought Sharon and I together to build the bridge.
That was one of my things. So when I was like, you need to hear this, yeah, so sorry, good, I guess. The other thing, to kind of address the last caller, and
mm-hmm.
something you said earlier in the show, Tim, you're like, somebody should do statistics on UFOs. Somebody
right.
did. Jacques Vallée.
Okay.
In his first couple books, Anatomy of Phenomenon, and what's the other one? Hang on a second. The one he wrote with his wife, Challenge to Science. He did
mm-hmm.
pretty much what you're talking about. The fact that his next book, he basically said, oh, aliens are like fairies in Passport to Magonia. I think that's kind of telling, you know, getting back to Sharon's discussion of sort of supernatural creep that he went and did. He was a computer scientist. I mean, you've talked to him. You know him better than I do.
Yeah.
He was
well,
a computer
I don't know
scientist.
Him very well. I mean, know him.
Well, yeah, I like to have his books on my shelf as far as I get. So,
okay.
He did that stuff in the 60s. He was in the space science, did computer science. He did a couple of statistical analyses. And then, yeah, he kind of went with, are they from another dimension? Are they kind of like the fairies and the Sheehy? And I don't know. That seems to be sort of a pattern in...
Okay, well, here's my response to that. That is just simply that, when did he do this? Like in the late 60s, early 70s? Maybe late 70s?
His first books were like mid-60s, Passport to Magonia, if I remember correctly, is 68.
Okay. Well, it's 2013. Let's try again.
Well, that's fair. And
as I said earlier, I'm like Dusty Rhodes. I keep it real for the common man. You know, it's been 40 years probably since he did that. The technology's improved. The databases have grown. Let's put it through the ringer again and see what comes out. I mean, what's the harm in trying?
Oh no, I don't disagree at all. I suspect I know what you'll find, but that's, you know, doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. And there have been others. I mean, I keep up on my UFO stuff to some degree. I know there have been others. But, yeah, Vallée did that early on. And, yeah, I think it's easily worth somebody doing it with. You know, I mean, you see the data mining. I just saw an amazing thing on Wired, a data mine where it literally is a map of cities showing the age of every city and how they grow in historical districts. You could do that. Of course,
right.
the problem
right.
is...
And it'd be much easier to do that now.
Right,
it
right. I wasn't coming at you aggro, Jeb. I was...
God, for God's sakes. You know, there's
yeah.
nothing you're going to do that my committee didn't do years ago. But,
you know,
the
I'm just saying,
is,
you know, it
yeah.
seems to, you know, it just makes sense to try again because everything's better now than it was back then. So maybe we'll find something that we couldn't have picked up previously.
Sure. The one thing that gets you to, though, is the old, I don't know if they use this term anymore, but the old GIGO, the garbage in, garbage out. And that, of course, if you're going to be designing some kind of scientific study, you can't just go and use all these things that were collected 50, 60 years ago other than as folkloric narratives. Because there's
I was suggesting that there should be more of a standardized way of collecting the data.
Yeah.
And to bring this around, go ahead.
No. The one thing with standardized data, though, is that coming from an anthropological perspective, that can get really complex really fast. But anyway, Tim, you were saying.
Well, I was just going to say, and the other challenge of that scenario is that we need a level-headed person on the end, on the other end of the printer when the information comes out, because we don't want the fear and the challenge of the UFO community is if something comes out, you know, if you get a proverbial wow signal, you know, we don't want someone running to the New York Times or the Washington Post being like, we crunch the numbers and UFOs come out on every time there's a crescent moon. It's like, no, dude, let's back up, slow down, let's take a look at what we've got, and then study that and not immediately, you know, pull a Melba Ketchum and run to, you know, NBC
News.
Going to
Fox News behalf lemur. Yeah, so.
Exactly.
But I just, it struck me when you mentioned that, because it just, it fascinates me that he started there and then went back to Irish folklore.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And I just see that in a lot of these fields. But anyway, I'm glad that this thing is working out with you guys as repeated guests and my little part in instigating that. So,
absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, y'all have.
Oh, I cut him off by accident. Still working through the phone lines, folks. Bear with me. Sorry, Jeb. Oh.
That's pretty good. I mean, you're managing to connect them and not disconnect them too soon.
Yes, that's true. Generally, I think in quote unquote real radio, they have someone else who pushes the button. So
yeah, but, probably right.
Yeah, well, I never claimed to be real radio, but one article that I sent to you before the interview, because you really railed on this sort of thing on the last episode you were on, and it was troubling when I saw this article, and I'll stick it in the chat room in a moment. But it was about how this study found that there was actually a whooping cough outbreak that was brought upon by people who eschewed the vaccination, which is scary if you think about it, because there's a lot of people, you know, that are, you know, serious non-believers in vaccines. And you want to give them – I know you don't, but I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and be like, listen – do whatever you want. I understand. That's fine. If you believe that, that's cool. But then you read these stories, and my attitude changes too, because then it's like, hold on a minute now, dude. I don't want whooping cough, so take the vaccine, please.
Right. I'm currently in an online course, which is for free. It's under Coursera. That's run by Dr. Paul Offit, who to me is the premier spokesperson for vaccines. He's a brilliant guy, invented a vaccine of his own. And the course is about the history of vaccines, and current, like the last lecture was about things like an alternate schedule of vaccines, where a lot of these parents understand, because they're educated people. The gist of that article was that the people who are eschewing vaccines are educated, wealthy parents.
Right.
The problem is they've never seen diseases. They've never grown up with them. They're not even their parents probably saw things like diphtheria or things that we're still vaccinating against right now.
Yeah.
So, and then a great point that he made, and the whole last lecture was about how it is so easy to buy into the anti-vax idea that we're giving too many too soon or that the kids are too young. And it was, I didn't know this stuff, fascinating how he describes how vaccines are created and how much more safer they are today for kids than when we were given them as kids. They're far more safer, they're far more effective, and there's actually less of certain components in the vaccine that can cause problems. So you and I, when we got vaccinated when we were kids, had a higher risk of having complications than kids do today. This kind of information is not out there. I didn't even know it.
Yeah.
And I not only am I a parent, but I'm also interested in vaccines. And I didn't know this stuff. So how do we expect the regular public to know it? You made this great point about how you'd have to watch your kid get 5 shots at one time. It's a terrible thing to have to go through. So you want to avoid that for your kids, but yet you're not looking at the other side of it because that's not information that's readily available to you. Your child on the table getting 4 shots, 5 shots at a time is the information that's readily available to you, and it's disturbing.
So, see, you're surprising me here because I guess my biased mind, I kind of presume these people who are skewing the vaccines are like New Agers, but I guess you're saying, I guess the question I have is if they're educated people, why are they not giving their kids the vaccines? Just because they've read the wrong reading material and believed it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I blame Jenny McCarthy. She's been out there. She's in the public eye, and she's been doing things like this. At the time, she was even using Jim Carrey to promote this Green the Vaccines movement. And I recall sitting in the salon one time, the lady's doing my hair, and she's telling me about how her sister got her kids vaccinated, and all of a sudden they had autism. This is what goes around in the culture, these stories that people tell each other because they're friends or they're relatives.
Yeah.
And people are influenced by that. So I think when you're living in a community with other people who are telling you that vaccines, oh, they're bad.
Right.
You want to fit in.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the big push for this type of rejection.
Yeah, like scuttlebutt.
Exactly. Well, we trust the people who talk to us face-to-face.
That's true, yeah. Well, there was a whole thing, wasn't there like a whole thing with like during the Republican debate that Michelle Bachmann told some crazy story about a kid that got a vaccine and got all kinds of diseases, and everyone was like, what are you doing? You don't even know what you're talking about.
There was the Gardasil vaccine for HPV given to teenagers.
Yeah.
And she said something stupid. But that was, she doesn't ever say anything smart. Because she had a unique agenda there where she disliked the Gardasil vaccine for other reasons, for religious reasons or ideological reasons. So she was using this story of it. She didn't make it up, but it was incorrect. You know, she heard it from what they perceived as a victim of this vaccine, and she took it at face value, and it wasn't true. But
right.
She passed it along to people. And you know, the old saying about a lie gets around the world while the truth is still put the shoes on, or something like that.
Exactly. So what else is new in the skeptic community as we get closer here to the end of the conversation? We talked about this before. The debate's still the same. I mean, if they're so certain that all of the paranormal stuff is wrong, it's like, haven't they already? Why haven't they just packed their bags and gone home and been like, all right, our work here's done?
There's really been the big push is with regards to things like homeopathy and quackery. It's huge in England, and places like Australia is way ahead of us with legislation and action against bad medicine.
Yeah.
The U.S. has certain political powers in place that prevent us from doing things like putting up legislation that would protect people against harmful dietary supplements. No, you can't do that. You want the freedom of the markets. They can manufacture whatever they want, and people are getting sick from these supplements that, one, they don't need to take, two, don't work, or three, we don't know what's in them because they're never tested and they don't have to be tested like regular drugs. The USA is unique in that, I think, because the business interests can push and get away with stuff.
Yeah.
Which is the opposite of saying things like Big Pharma is bad. Big Pharma is bad, sure. Any big business is going to be bad, but Big Pharma also saves people's lives. And the modern medicine is an excellent thing. So I think that the skeptical community really does try to focus on those medical issues because they mean lives. We're really talking about people's lives.
What's your take on the GMO food thing?
When I was in graduate school, I had ethics, like an ethics class, and a couple philosophy classes where we discussed GMO, genetic engineering, cloning, all those new technologies that are ethically questionable. We haven't faced things like this before. In a nutshell, I would say that genetically modified foods, organisms, have been around since we started agriculture. It's just that now we can make the adjustments quicker and in the lab. we have always been manipulating organisms through
selection. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, okay.
Selection. We bred livestock. We developed crops for certain reasons. Now we have the ability to do it much faster and more specifically, like by adding in certain vitamins, necessary components, or pest resistance or something like that. That's progress. I think it's a wonderful thing. And I think people have really the wrong idea about GMOs. On the other hand, you do have companies that are taking advantage of the organism that comes out the other end.
Yeah, I guess there's a difference between, I guess,
and stuff like that.
Kimberly in the chat room makes the point. I guess there's a difference between breeding, selectively breeding, and genetically engineering. That's the concern.
It's just a more efficient way. It doesn't make it any less strange. It's just much faster and much more efficient and much more precise.
I guess, yeah. I guess. See, this is where my non-scientific mind is probably at a disadvantage here, because I just assume it's not really a good idea to, like, mess, you know, deeply with the proverbial genetic guts of an organism. It's one thing to sort of, like, you know, you breathe.
Nature does it all the time.
I know, but I guess that's the debate, right? Playing God and being, you know, tinkering with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, people have that naturalistic fallacy. They think that if, you know, it's natural, and this feels unnatural. But there's actually nothing quite as unnatural as farming one crop on a piece of land over and over again. It's a very unnatural thing, but we need it to survive. So there's a lot of things we do that don't feel quite right, but they really don't have harm. If you really look into the guts of it, you'll see that it's not anything that's going to be catastrophic. But there's always these ethical questions that we should address. And if it means people are being concerned about these issues, we need to do a better job of explaining them and realizing that there's a bigger benefit to GMOs than not using them at all. I mean, people will die. There's no doubt about that.
Okay. All right.
We need to support the population of the world here.
Well, that's another whole debate about the overpopulation and whether, you know, whether we have too many people on the planet as it is.
Right.
You know, but that's a whole, we only have 9 minutes left, so. And I want to tell
this
story about my dentist trip that I talked to you about before I started the show.
I can't wait.
Yeah, as I told you before we started the program, I would have told this story no matter who the guest is. So we're going way off the skeptical thing, but it does kind of tie into this, because I can only imagine that you would be even more, even more uncomfortable in this situation. But so I go to the dentist yesterday, and I'm getting some fillings, and there's the dentist and her assistant, who is like this 20-year-old girl who is just finishing up her I don't know, residency, let's say, okay? And I hope that didn't sound sexist. I didn't mean it to be that way. But,
no. But
yeah, she's a young woman, let's say. Anyway, so we're near the end here. We've got maybe like 15 minutes left of the operation, if you call it that. I don't know what you call a dental procedure.
Procedure.
There you go, yeah. My dentist, who is from Syria, starts talking about, she says, did you know that the children in the video of the Syrian gas attack, they've been seen in other videos of other attacks, and it's all a big hoax?
And she's, oh, no.
Yeah, and she's, like, telling me this. And you know, having known me this long, that I do love a good conspiracy theory. So it's like, this is great. I'm getting parapolitical radio while I'm having my teeth done. I'm getting first-person parapolitical radio from a Syrian lady. And then she starts to get more extreme. And she starts, like, bringing Israel into it and how Israel wants to, like, take over part of Egypt, and how Israel and the United States are still on the same team, or are on the same team, and they're working together. And of course, I have her hands in my mouth. I cannot say a word, right? This is all a one-sided conversation. And it's bordering now on a lecture, and it's getting very uncomfortable.
Wow.
Yeah, and at first I'm just like, oh, okay, this lady's got a she's got a cool conspiracy theory, you know, this is nice, and you know, and she's like, but you don't hear about that in the media because the United States doesn't want anyone to know that it's all a big hoax. And then she's like, this is where it got really uncomfortable because I'm like, all right, lady, you know, I didn't say this, I'm thinking this because again, she has her hands in my mouth. You know, I'm thinking, all right, lady, your country's in turmoil. I sympathize with your plight. You know, let's kind of wrap this up. And because not only is she telling the story, but she's like pausing as people do to tell a story, you know? And I'm like, my eyes are darting across the room at the clock. And I'm like, I've been here for 90 minutes because I got like 4 fillings. I'm a candy lover. What can I say? You know, and I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, this is not, you're not my neighbor. This isn't the time for you to do this. And I just want her to speed it up. And then, of course, the young lady who is young, who's doing her residency, the dentist says, oh, and I have an FBI agent that comes in. And he said he's lost so many of his colleagues due to Obama's policies. And I'm super liberal. This is where it gets uncomfortable. I guess if someone was really conservative, they'd be like, oh, yeah, this is awesome. But for me, it was like I'm aghast. Because then the college-age girl's like, I hate Barack Obama. I honestly hope he gets impeached. And I'm just like, my eyes probably bugged out at that point. I'm just like, young lady, you don't have no understanding of how the government works or that could never possibly happen. And then she goes, Obama's destroying America. And I'm just like, oh, my God, get me out of here. And, you know, thank you. Vale yes. says, that's kind of inappropriate for the dentist. Don't you
exactly.
think?
Exactly.
Do I need to find a new dentist?
I would, because I wouldn't want to have to sit through any of that again.
And you know, it's and of course my face is like falling off, you know, my lips and my tongue are falling out of my head because everything's numb. So at the end of the thing, it's like, you know, she's trying to upsell me on Invisalign and all this other stuff. And she's like, well, you know, let me put you down again. I really want to be like, listen, again, I respect your plight as a native Syrian, but you know, don't
but
be
not the time and place.
Yeah,
not
don't
at all.
Please don't bring your politics into the dental visit. Isn't that weird? This is why I want to tell the story.
Does she own the business?
Yes.
That's really bad business practice.
That's what I've been saying. That's what everyone I've talked to about it's been saying. It's like,
yeah.
I just wanted this on the record for the show. As I told Jeremy Vaney, this is you wouldn't know what I'm talking about. This is we have a comedy show. This is a good parade story if there ever was one. And I figured if I never told this story, I never would get around to it. But isn't that, oh, God, just, I'm aghast.
I don't know what I would do. I'd be so furious.
I'm pretty PO'd about the whole thing. That's why I'm mentioning it here. I don't want to go on Yelp and be like, well, if you're a hardcore conservative, this is the dentist for you. But
that's pretty funny, though, because, like, she had no idea what you do in your extra time and how much you know about this topic.
Right, it was like,
he's lecturing you.
This is neither the time nor the place for this conversation, lady. And you know, you're probably going to lose my business. And how do you even know where I stand on these things? You're crazy. So, goodness. Well, we're at the end of the show here. What's next for you? What's coming up for Sharon Hill? We talked about you possibly writing a book. I know you're doing that. You know, back before when we first talked, it was Huffington Post hadn't even come along yet, so there's probably some stuff percolating. So what's coming up for you?
Yeah, I have some books percolating.
Nice.
I'm currently working on one, and I have 2 other good ideas. So.
All right.
I'll be busy for a while. Doubtful News keeps me really busy every day. Obviously, that's my main time that
yeah.
I spend. So.
All right. Well, folks.
And that's grown huge, so I'm really excited about it.
It's getting massive, and you know, it's you may be on Joe Rogan soon. So if you can get out to California,
I know I'm gonna get out there to LA. Interesting to talk to him.
Yeah, I don't know too much about him, but it sounds. I will. I don't even listen to the show really because I barely have time to listen to any show but my own when I edit it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be definitely interested in checking that out. Well, it's been great to have you back, Sharon. This 2 hours flew by, and another great conversation, really. I really can't put you over enough. And you know, I really like talking to you because even though we come from such disparate worlds, we find a way to come together, and I think that's awesome.
Yeah, we agree on so much. really.
I think so. I think so.
Thanks.
Thank you for coming on the show. And now for the plugs, folks. I tried to do it a little bit earlier than normal. If you're listening someplace else and you don't know what you've tuned into, you're listening to BOA Audio. You can find more of it at banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. Check us out on Facebook. Just punch in Banal of America on Facebook. You'll find us there. We're nearing 1,100 likes. If you can help us out, this costs money. It's not a free service for me. It's free for you. It's not free for me. So make a donation via PayPal or at the BOA P.O. Box. That would be greatly appreciated. You can find those at Banal of America as well. The guest next week is to be announced. I've got a taped show in the till, but I'm working on getting somebody on for a potential live show. This is kind of the pluses and minuses, I guess you could say, of Season 8. You never know if it's going to be taped or live. We may do a live show. You'll probably know more by Friday. If not, we're going to have a taped show, and the taped show is outstanding. You don't have to worry about that, folks. It's going to be a real barn burner. And so, I guess, with all that said, thank you very much, folks, for tuning in. And you'll be hearing from me in the not-too-distant future. Have a great night. And until next time, this is Tim Banal signing off.